Intervju Radija Študent.
Autor pesmi I'm a Dog je Wambli Gleška Tokahe, staroseljec ljudstva Lakota iz rezervata Rosebud v zvezni državi Južna Dakota v ZDA in bo gost današnjega intervjuja. Je dolgoletni aktivist ameriškega indijanskega gibanja, glasbenik ter humanitarni delavec. Spregovoril bo o življenjskih razmerah v rezervatu, predstavil svoje poglede na prihajajoče volitve v ZDA ter objasnil še marsikater pogled domorodcev na zahodnjo družbo. Wambli Gleška Tokahe, that is your Lakota name. Can you please explain its meaning and very briefly talk about yourself? Where do you come from?
Well, I'm here in the Rosebud Lakota Reservation here in South Dakota, USA. My name, Wambli Gleška Tokahe, means leading spotted eagle.
Okay.
Tokahe actually means first, you know, like the first. But when you're referring to the eagles flying, the one in the front, we don't never say that's the first eagle. We say that's the leading eagle. And Gleška means spotted. Wambli, of course, means eagle. And I'm from the Rosebud Lakota Reservation. They call us the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. But we're not Sioux. Some kind of way we got stuck with that. So anyway, that's where I'm from, and that's who I am. The other thing is the three reservations over here that we live in, there's Rosebud, Pine Ridge, and they all, for some reason, use the Sioux name. But myself, we're changing. We want to be acknowledged as Lakota and not Sioux, because Sioux isn't who we are.
And yeah, Sioux is a white name. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, like that's how it came to be. You know, the government, and they came over here and they corrupted our people's minds. They corrupted us. They got us where we call ourselves Indians, and we're not Indians, you know. We're not from India and all that. No disrespect, but, you know, we're not Indians either. We're people, the first peoples of this country, North and South America, this whole continent. And things are changing now, and we're striving hard to maintain our dignity and our identity. And it's become a problem, but we're working on it, and we've got some strong people in support of us to help us be strong to get our identity back,
you know? Yeah. So everywhere where people are put down and struggling, and music is one of the ways out of this. And yeah, you're a musician yourself, and you play guitar in a band called Aerospace. What is the what is the base for your lyrics, for example, and why you chose to play so-called res rock and roll?
It's really funny because, you know, I started playing accordion when I was like 6 or 7 years old. My mom put me in accordion school, so I learned music, you know. So I play several instruments. I love to play the saxophone. I play an alto sax because it's lighter, and when I perform on stage, I don't be running out there with a big old tenor sax, because I'm not that tall of a, I'm not 6 foot tall. But anyway, I say Aerospace, we're the inventors of res rock, because the music I write it mostly right here on the reservation. And the thing about it is there's a lot of Native American groups out there. People probably remember Redbone, or they remember Exit, or they know about Indigenous or other groups. And these groups were sort of an inspiration to me, but they all lived in the city. You know, they were, some people call them urban Indians. They were raised in the city. When you live in a city, you have access to everything to make you great. You have music stores right there. You have radio stations. You have people. You have all this. But when you live on a Indian reservation, you know, I live 187 miles from a Walmart, from a big store, from to buy guitar strings. It's a real struggle. My bass player lived 100 miles away. My drummer, you know, it's hard to really be a group. So to be a Lakota group on a reservation, that was a struggle. And our music is basically rock and roll, kind of like old stuff and mixed with new stuff. And we also use the piano. Most of our groups on the reservation, they just have guitar, bass, and drums. And there was not too many groups like Aerospace that lived on the Indian reservation.
Yeah, your music is really unique, and one of your songs is entitled 10 Below. What's the story behind it?
You know, about 2 years ago, maybe going on 3 years ago, and I would like to thank Pete Bender from Berlin, who asked to redo this song, and he's did a better version of it. And of course, Res Rock, I do it Res Rock, but 10 Below was written right here on a chair. I was sitting there with the guitar, and we were really freezing. It was 10 Below, and it was written in November, I think about 2010 maybe, or no, 2009. It was 2009, and it was really cold. And even though it was cold, we had many problems, you know, like a young girl committed suicide named Mariah. And I was sitting on this chair, and I lost a couple of my AIM brothers from the American Indian Movement, and they were also sun dancers. And I was sitting here, and I started thinking about, we didn't even have a car. Our cars broke down. You know, we don't have propane in the tank. We were struggling. Our people struggle. Yeah. I was sitting there, and I just started writing 10 Below. 10 Below in these Rosebud Plains, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what...
You know what? We're just going to play it for our listeners.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Let's jump to the main topic of today's interview, which is the current presidential election in the U.S. Wambly, you as a traditional Lakota man, have you noticed any change for the good of the people on your reservation in the first 4 years of Obama as president?
No, I haven't, you know, and I appreciate Obama because he's not a white man, or like we say, Washichu. And that really hurts people when I use the word Washichu. But we thought, well, not me, I already knew, but just to appreciate that there's no longer a white man in the office, people were happy. They thought that things would change. I knew they wouldn't. We've been through 28 presidents since the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty, and not one of them has done anything to activate these treaties or even comply with them. So for that reason, I knew this guy wasn't going to either, and he had 4 years. He didn't do it. It only took George Bush using a black man, Colin Powell, 2 hours in front of the United Nations to wage war against Iraq. It only took them 2 hours. Well, here we are, more than 100-something years later, 58,000 days later, and still not one president has done anything to make our life better, and neither is Obama, and he's not going to do it now, and he's not going to do it if he gets reelected. This country does not belong to anybody. It sure don't belong to them. If anything, it's the indigenous people, and in the beginning of time, we didn't have laws like them. We never could run a country the way they do it, with war and all that. But it's not going to change. He's not going to change it, and it's not going to change in the next 100, 200 years. It's not going to be that way. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. That's how we feel about Obama. And Romney, if Romney gets in there, it's just the same, but worse. They always say, vote for the worst of two evils. I vote for no evil.
Uh-huh. So you don't vote?
Nope. I do not.
But when you do some research on the internet, it quickly becomes pretty obvious that Native America is a big supporter of Barack Obama. Why?
Yes, they are. And because even in my radio show, I have had a couple Native Americans say, give him a chance. He only had 4 years. But like I said, it only takes an hour of time and some research to activate the treaties. Most of Native America has been corrupted and will fly that American flag. We've lost our identity. Let's put it that way. There's only a few traditionals like myself and a few others, the American Indian movement, that stick to our traditional ways and try to preserve them. But we're nothing compared to major Native America who flies that American flag at powwows, even at Sundances. I mean, we've lost it. That's why they vote for Obama. They vote for him because he's a black man, and they think that they honestly believe that he's going to be able to change it, and he will change it. And he invites a couple he met with a Native American who gave him an elk tooth. I said, you don't give them an elk tooth. They don't know what an elk tooth is. They're going to throw it in the trash, you know. Anyway, I'm trying to be fast because I knew you have limited time.
Next question would be related to the previous one. How different are your tribal leaders from the presidents of the United States?
Our tribal leaders, once they become president, they try to imitate the presidents. They try to imitate them, and they try to be like them. And everything they do is like them. They lost their identity themselves once they go in there, and it hurts us because we don't want to walk into a tribal leader and watch him staring at us or trying to ignore us, and he's acting like a world leader, because he's not a world leader. The world is way above the mentality that a lot of our tribal leaders have, because they're trying to do it like world leaders. If they maintain their traditional ways, then we have intelligence and we have humbleness and we have wisdom to share with the world. But you know, there's no way we can compete with the white man, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
our tribal leaders, they fall into that bag. We don't see them no more. They ignore us.
Do you think that your tribal leaders have enough power to improve the life situation on the reservations, but they just don't do it?
I believe they do. I believe that if we had a tribal leader that was not a fence walker, that just made one plan and stuck to it, it would work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they get into a mode where they have to appease the U.S. government. See, once you take money from the U.S. government, you have to comply with their rules. So in other words, if before we'd have lawyers working in our courthouse that didn't have law degrees out in the world. We had judges that were elderly men. But once you take the money, the government says, you know what, that judge, he's not eligible to be a judge, so you need to get rid of him and put a licensed bar, licensed attorney or judge in your office. So now they're controlling the standards we live by, you know, so we can't just have anybody be a lawyer, attorney, police officer, leader, or what. They have to have a college degree or comply with United States standards to be able to hold a position, when all our wise men with wisdom are elders and traditional leaders and spiritual leaders who have no degrees.
So since the funds are not shared equally amongst the people on the reservation, there's no other way but that you organize yourselves and help each other. And this is exactly what you're doing. You operate a non-profit organization called Emergency Relief Centers of Turtle Island. What's your main focus? What do you do?
Well, our main focus is to try to assist our people in the worst times of the year, mainly in the winter times. You know, when the winter comes and it's the worst time, our tribal leaders decide to pick those days to go home. We can find nobody in a blizzard. We can find no one. So people look for someone like us. Can you get us some firewood? We need some propane. We have a handicapped child. We have an elderly in the house and we have no propane. The tribal leaders, we're calling them up. They answer the phones. The electric company don't answer the phones. No one's there to help us. Can you help us? So we try and we do what we can. And we need to build that up. We need to be able to, we established a trailer home to have a contact place, you know, like a relief center, emergency relief center, but we need to raise money to make it more appropriate. We do this, and then we try to get trailer homes that are donated to, they give them up, they're free. We just have to go pick them up. So we have a big truck, and I thank Claire Kaiser for helping us. She helped us out of Europe. And the thing is, we have a big truck, and if we get diesel fuel, we'll go pick up trailer homes and deliver them to needy families and serve other things, you know, even if it's pulling someone out of the snow with a truck or something, you know. We need to be able to help our people, and that's what we're about. And it's not just for our reservation, it's for the other reservations. It's not just for the Lakota. We have also helped Indians out in the city who couldn't pay their bills. We raise money and help people in the cities. And it's not just for Indian people. We help people in poverty who had no way else, and they ran across us, so we helped them. It's for everybody. We're not discriminate or racist against any other culture.
Okay.
You know?
So you have a website as well where our listeners maybe can find some more information, including PayPal account, if anyone would like to support a good cause. It's emergencyreliefcenters.org, and of course the same name exists on Facebook. Now, just really quickly, really shortly, can you just make a comment? When I listen to your radio show, which is really unique, you talk about quite frequently in about the use of Native American names for the U.S. Army's weapons or battle vehicles. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I disagree with the government trying to make the world think we condone their war. When they use Tomahawk missiles that cost $150,000 a shot to go fly in and kill people in Libya to get rid of Gaddafi, that was one example. They use Apache helicopters, Israel is using them to kill Palestinians. They now have a Lakota helicopter. I don't agree with this because we're not part of the U.S. government's attack on other countries and outside. This country needs to be cared about here. You know, if our leaders, if their leaders, the American leaders, want to live, they should worry about the people in this country since they occupy it. They come over here, occupy this country, but they do not take care of the country. They make weapons and use Native American names to go commit atrocities with other people. I don't like it. Our people don't like it. And I don't know why the Apache would allow them to use an Apache helicopter, or why my own Lakota people, if the tribal leaders would allow them to use the name Lakota on a helicopter, or even the name Tomahawk. That isn't no tribal name, but that's a reference of our people, our indigenous people over here. It is bad. We don't like it. I myself as an individual don't want the world to know that I support this government's wars against other countries. Their drones killing people and killing children and women and all that. It's not our business, you know. And they made it our business. I don't appreciate that, you know. And that's how I feel about it. And our people don't like it. Don't like them using the names of our tribes on these war machines.
So to finish off with the interview, please talk a bit about the things that make you proud to be a Lakota. What is special about your people that allows you to survive this ongoing oppression?
The thing about my people, the Lakota, one thing about us is we maintained over 10, 15, 20,000 years, and many people will not believe this. They will not believe it. They will doubt it and question it. But we still sing the same songs, spiritual songs that we sang for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. We're the only tribe that's done that. We're the only tribe that maintained our spiritual beliefs, and we stuck to it strong even to this day. All the tribes come over in Sundance with us, people all over Sundance. They believe in our Uipi ceremonies, our ways to cure cancer. It's not a belief system of, you know, of wishing. We use actual medicine. We use actual medicines from the earth, and we cure cancer and a lot of things with our medicines. It's not face healing. But our people have spirituality you wouldn't believe, even in times of disaster. When it looks like we're going to fall apart, we just reach for, we smudge our house down and we grab a drum and we sing and pray. That's how we live in our worst of times, and it gives us great hope to survive. And we can last through the worst times. And that's what Lakota people are about. We have our spirituality that will not go away. We carry these songs for 10, 15,000 years. They're going to be here for a million years more. We're not going to give that up. And it's our people that maintain it. And I think my people, the Lakotas, who every day pray this way, even my son in my house, even my children, all of us around here, we walk in this traditional way. Some of us, and we're strong at it, and we're not going to let it go away. It's growing. You know, we have some hope. We're spreading the word, you know, and we're keeping our faith strong.
I want to say, Lila Wopila, thank you for this great interview, and really best of luck with everything you do.
Yes, and I appreciate that, and thank you for saying that in Lakota. Lila Wopila Tanka, you know, we thank you very much.
Pogovarjal sem se Miha Mihelič.
Intervju Radija Študent.